so damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. I'll show you all the bills. Hey guys, welcome out to yet another episode of Beyond the Gauntlet. I am Mike, the Birdman Dodd, and well, I hope you bought issue one because we're going to be here a while. I am joined with
Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet and master of mind games.
I'm Jeff DeHaan. Follow us on Twitter at Gauntlet Podcast.
And I'm Jamie McBurney, and I'm the wielder of the Infinity Gauntlet.
And yes, guys, we're here at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario, Canada. You should come check us out. Check out the storefront. Video games, comic books, and my arcade machines live here. You should be checking them out. They are awesome. So, guys, today's topic, we're going to look at Eventa Comics, your Blackest Nights, your Superior Spider-Man, your clone sagas, your onslaughts.
Appropriate tone, thank you.
And that's how we're going to start this. And this is a topic, I think I can actually contribute to this one. I'm excited.
We throw you a bone every so often.
Yeah, I know. Well, Mike, you don't know who this is, so anyway.
How did you hear about that convert?
I know. I'm everywhere.
Rat.
So where do we start with this? Because Event Comics, and I want to start this one simply for this reason. Event Comics is what got me out of them.
Well, one of my favorite events was the Firefly movie, which happened after the series Firefly, he said, looking at Chris.
Yes, the Firefly does actually have several events in the comic books, but we bring Firefly up with that very subtle nudge by Jamie there, because
that was subtle.
There is a wonderful board game that just hit the market by Gale Force 9 Games, which is the Firefly board game. Yes, for all you Firefly junkies out there,
brown coats.
This game literally is the epitome of the game, where you have to find a crew, find a job, and keep flying. Everybody in the game basically gets a ship, and then they have to find and crew the ship, and after they find and crew the ship, they then have to do jobs to make sure they keep paying their crew and repairing their ship. This is all done through various events in the game. Events, yes, we're tying it in.
There we go.
As well as various, you know, dice rolls, as well as other various board game antics, and you travel around the universe attempting to snipe jobs out from under your competition, snipe crew out from under their competition, and keep your ship in the air the longest.
Now, hopefully we should have a full review of this in a couple of weeks. We just reached out to these guys, Gale Force 9. So if you hear from us, please give us the game. We want to talk about it.
Yeah, and if you guys want to look up anything more on the game yourself, you can check it out at fireflyboardgame.com.
Looks sounds pretty shiny.
Damn,
oh, jinx! Jinx, you owe me coke.
There's also
everyone keeps sniping, Jeff.
There's also a Firefly.
Why is it always me?
There's also a new Firefly RPG coming out. I don't know if it's out. I mean, Gen Con was just a few weeks ago, so I think it's supposed to be out by Margaret Weiss Productions, same people that did the Marvel RPG, and hopefully they fixed the Firefly game so it works properly now, but we'll have to wait and see. Shall we get started with the topic, my friend?
Events. Yes. Now, let's go back to you, Mike. You were saying that the events are what take you out of comics. Why is that?
Because it's so hard to keep up with everything, and the best example I can think about this was Onslaught. Here, you need to buy X-Men this, that, and the other thing. Oh, and there was they talked about it for like one page in Spider-Man. Oh, and it's over here in the Hulk. Man, I couldn't keep up with it, and eventually I just looked at my comic book guy and said, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to buy role-playing books from now on. I'm done. And I was out of comics until I met you.
And you know what? The funny thing is, I hear this from a lot of people, and I think a lot of the events that happened in the 90s did that, where if you were a collector of, say, X-Men comic books, already you had to deal with X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, X-Force, X-Factor, X-this and X-that, and suddenly an event comes out, and already you're strapped for cash collecting these six or seven titles that you're collecting, and suddenly they make the event cross over into 14-plus titles.
For no reason,
for
either.
No reason, when the event shouldn't technically be crossing into that. An X-Men event should be in X-Men comic books. You shouldn't have to go and read Incredible Hulk. You shouldn't have to go read Spider-Man. You shouldn't have to go read Batman. I don't know how it crossed into DC, but it did. You know, it's one of those things that is a pure and blatant a pure and blatant attempt by the comic companies to suck more cash out of you.
And when we talk about events, like let's just clarify, events are. What how could we describe them? Like the summer blockbusters?
Yeah, they're
of
basically
comics?
The huge exactly. marquee event for the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big event that comics try to do where it's like they sort of hype it under this idea of it's a big universe changing story and this is something you want to know about because it's going to be something awesome and explosions.
It's going to change the status quo. It's meant to draw in new readers, but at the same time, you're like, that's awesome. What the hell's going on?
Right. It's exciting, but at the same time, it's
And
it's
there
really
is a right way and a wrong way for companies to handle these things. For an example of wrong ways is the Onslaught Saga. The Onslaught Saga just crossed into too many books. Another one was the Age of Apocalypse Saga. Mm-hmm. Age of Apocalypse, you had to jump from collecting, you know, half a dozen books to 3 dozen books.
My best friend, we're as close as brothers, and he doesn't collect, like, monthly comics or anything like that. So basically, birthdays, Christmases, I'll buy him graphic novels and stuff. And I remembered him telling me, this is going back a couple of years, that one of the first comics he ever read was part of the Age of Apocalypse. He thought it was really cool. He didn't know much about it. He's like, Rogue and Magneto are together? What's going on? So for Christmas or his birthday 1 year, I've got all 4 volumes of Age of Apocalypse. And I gave it to him, and it was, you know, he thought it was really cool. He got to read it all. And I asked him a couple weeks later, once he said he was done, I'm like, how was it? He's like, you know, it's fantastic. I'm glad I got to read it. I didn't have a friggin' clue what was going on. And this is the collected edition when you think all the information would be there, but now, he still didn't know.
Now, one thing that I find that one of the things that when the company does it correctly as opposed to incorrectly is they will actually take a backbone comic that if you only read this one series of the comic, you would know what's going on and you don't technically have to branch out into everything else. For example, Infinity Gauntlet, in Infinity War and Infinity Crusade, all 3 of these events from the 90s had a backbone comic, Infinity Gauntlet issue 1-6. If you read that, you would get the point and case of the event, and you didn't have to cross into every other little thing that had an Infinity Gauntlet marquee on it. Other series that Marvel has done like this as well, there's been Civil War, Secret Invasion, et cetera, et cetera. For DC, Blackest Night,
Flashpoint.
Etc. If you were a reader and you just wanted to read the core title one and collect the run of that, you knew what was going on and you knew how it was affecting the universe without having to collect a billion other comic books on top of it.
But doesn't stop them from releasing a billion other comic books to
go on top of it. Because there are going to be those people that do want to know more.
And Flashpoint is a good example of that. Like, I'm the type of guy who, for the most part, I'm a sucker for events anyways. I said it last episode. I really am.
Well, when they're good, they're great.
Exactly. And Civil War is a prime example of that. But I usually just collect the core event and tie-ins that I'll enjoy. Like for DC ones, I'll usually get a Batman tie-in or whatever. With Flashpoint, I did just get the Batman tie-in. But they created an entire new world. And it made me want to actually collect all these other books because it wasn't just the core story that was interesting. You wanted to know what was going on between Wonder Woman and Aquaman. You wanted to know what was going on with Deathstroke on his like pirate ship or whatever, right. Which sounds hokey, but it was fantastic. And they really crafted a great world with Flashpoint, and that's why I really enjoyed that one.
For those of you, Flashpoint has been collected into several graphic novels. There is the main one, which really is the only one you necessarily need. But if you do like some of the side stuff, there is a Batman, a Wonder Woman, as well as just a collection of the other stories. And just recently, a couple of weeks ago, the Flashpoint Paradox animated movie came out, which does a pretty good job of summing up the entire event in an animated movie.
Easy, Jamie.
No, I'm good. I've moved on. But speaking of DC, I always think of, and I'd be curious to know what you guys have to say about this. The first major sort of event comic that I always think of is Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
Crisis on Infinite Earths was DC, and they basically had written themselves into a corner by they said, oh, we have like a billion different alternate Earths. So we've got Bat Superman on this Earth, and we've got like Zebra Batman on this Earth, and we've got Batgirl, who's Batman's female analog, on this Earth. And the comics in 86 or 87, they said, we've got to make this simpler. This is insane. Mm-hmm. So they crafted this giant event comic to get rid of all of these alternate Earths and make their universe simpler and easier to follow.
It's funny that you actually bring that up, because that's the entire reason New 52 happened. Was, again, they wrote themselves into a convoluted, cobweb-filled universe where nobody knew what was real, what wasn't real, what story arcs actually happened, which ones happened on what Earth and what generation, mm-hmm. with, as you say, Zebra Batman or not. And thus, Flashpoint came around, mm-hmm. to clean that up.
The interesting thing, though, is that I feel like they almost, I don't want to say jumped the gun, but they rushed into it. Because the problem, once they did Flashpoint and they were moving into the New 52, there were all sorts of fans who were saying, well, this story still happened, right?
Yeah.
And this story still happened, right? And DC was like, because when they rebooted everything, there was only a 5-year gap from the dawn of the superheroes, we'll call it.
In that, like, 5 years, Batman had like 7 Robins.
Yeah.
and like, it seems like certain events in the Green Lantern thing still happen.
Well, they've been, Geoff Johns, I believe, said that actually nothing in Green Lantern had changed. Everything, yeah.
Blackest
the same.
Day, yeah. Brightest, or Blackest Night, Brightest Day, all that stuff.
Scott Snyder has said the same thing about Batman, is that he treats it as if
nothing had happened.
Nothing.
They
had
just
changed.
Shortened the time frame.
The problem is, these guys were involved in events that haven't happened.
Yeah.
Like, so what happened to Identity Crisis, for example, where Sue Dibny gets raped by Dr. Light, but Dr. Light only just got introduced in an issue of Justice League. So if Dr. Light wasn't around, then Identity Crisis didn't happen. If Identity Crisis didn't happen, then Batman's mind didn't get wiped.
Easy there, Jeff.
Are you guys trying to give me an aneurysm? I feel like you've been baiting me for like the last 3 episodes by saying all this god-awful DC stuff.
Is that what you're
driving
developing?
Me up and
you know, and you know what? We were waiting. We're going to see how far it takes you to pop and just explode on Mike.
Here's a question. Who gets it right more often than not, Marvel or DC?
That's...
I find DC stuff's almost easier to follow in some ways.
What I often find about DC, and I would just like to say, saying DC sucks now is like saying water is wet. A lot of the DC stuff is about cleaning up or fixing something. Often a lot of DC events tend to be, you know, let's fix this, let's reorganize this, let's, you know, have this person, like, for example, the death of Superman was one of the bigger events of the 90s that was relatively successful,
mm-hmm.
And the event after he died was the Reign of the Superman, where they introduced all these other characters, and the whole point was, let's get Superman into the cultural, back into like his sort of place as this, mm-hmm. big cultural touchstone. And Flashpoint, for example, was about cleaning up the universe and, mm-hmm. sort of, and Crisis on Infinite Earths, and a lot of the DC stories that were like universe spanning events are all about cleaning up and reorganizing who they are or what they are. There will be like Batman events, like No Man's Land, which is all about
the destruction of
the
God.
The destruction that came after Cataclysm, yeah.
But that event also is about reorganizing sort of the Bat universe and giving these characters sort of
almost
a new...
When you,
clean slate,
when
yeah.
you ask me, you know, the difference between a Marvel and a DC event, like Jamie said, it seems that the DC events are to fix problems that they wrote themselves into. Marvel events are to create more problems for the writers to deal with after.
Yes.
The difference that I see between the two is, I find with DC's events, they're more, I find, you were saying that they were easier to follow, or maybe Mike said that.
Yeah.
But I think the reason for that is that for the most part, DC's events don't spill over into the monthly titles. The monthly titles have their own thing going on, which have nothing, like when Flashpoint was going on, all the monthly titles were still doing their own thing. And they'll have their own crossovers, like there was Blackest Night Batman, Blackest Night this, etc.
Right, yeah.
But all the monthly titles still go, whereas I find with Marvel, a lot of time when something's going on, like an event, the crossovers... They have like their frontline crossovers, which tie in and everything, but then they have like the monthly issues that tie in as well. So I feel like the DC events are a little more contained. I also feel that Marvel does a lot more. Like, Marvel almost has a different tiers for events. Because you'll have a Civil War. You'll have, like, maybe House of M or, you know, the major ones like that. But then you get things like Spider Island or the War of the Hulks or when they had, these mini events that don't necessarily qualify as, like, one of the major
ones. Well, Marvel has their summer event. Mm-hmm. These are your things that have traditionally been Civil War, Planet Hulk, Secret Invasion, Siege, Avengers versus X-Men, and the one that's currently going on, Infinity.
Yeah.
All right. And they usually are the thing that come the end of the event, as I stated, there are problems now in the universe that the writers get to have fun with.
Yeah.
and tactically clean up in time for the next event. Now, the mini events are more self-contained to genres of books. They'll
Shadow
be like,
Land, for example.
Shadowland was just in Punisher, Daredevil, and Spider-Man. It was a street-level event. Or you'll get something like World War Hulks, which is in all the Hulk titles. Or you'll get something to the Curse of the Mutants, which crosses all the X-Men books. But those events usually are contained within the actual issues, and there is no side main comic you have to collect.
Right. With Infinity, which is, I think the first issue comes out next week, right?
Time this episode airs, it will be out.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's coming out. And it's a few issues going through, but it's got that main spine of the Infinity series. But I mean, like, I was just looking up and I pulled up. I had to write down all the Infinity tie-in issues for a personal checklist. Yeah. And I'm looking at it right now.
You don't need to do that. I have a checklist on the front counter Marvel provided.
Oh, why did I waste all my typing time?
Because you're like that.
Exactly. Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, if you think about catering to a comic nerd core group, there's nothing comic nerds like more than being pedantic and figuring out all these pieces and how things go together.
So oh yeah,
to a certain extent, yeah, exactly. Why I have a checklist. I wrote. Marvel has given us a checklist to go through and make sure we have everything. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, and Mike, like you were saying, those are not necessarily friendly to non-obsessive nerds.
Yeah, and it's not fun. I mean, event books to me should be exciting. They should be thrilling. Blackest Night, to me, I waited until there was a trade.
Yeah.
Very thankful that I did that. One of the ones that really turned me off was Onslaught. Because, like I said, it crossed into so many books. And to me, that was one of the coolest events of the 90s. I love the Onslaught character is like one of the coolest looking things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that it crossed into so many different books for like no real reason. And like I said, you'd have to be that obsessive nerd to know that. I mean, Chris, you've got something that I noticed on the side there. It's like this Marvel checklist book and it tells you what you need to follow. And I'm thinking, that's not fun to me. I'd rather be able to read one book and have everything presented. And I like the idea that DC does that.
Yeah, there's the whole idea I think Marvel has is, like I said, they have their scopes of events.
Right.
You're going to have your big Fear Itself event, which is something that really did affect the entire universe. Therefore, you found that a large percentage of the comic books touched somehow in that event. And usually when they do the big world-altering events or world events, they always have a main story arc. They will have Fear Itself issue 1, Fear Itself issue 2, you know, the Secret Invasion issue 1, Secret Invasion issue 2. So to save you having to go and, if you only collected 3 X-Men titles and an Incredible Hulk title, and suddenly you saw Fear Itself in Spider-Man and Fear Itself in something else, you don't necessarily have to jump and collect those titles because you got your main story arc, which happens in Fear Itself, and then you can keep collecting the normal books that you collect and see how it affects the characters you're used to reading.
There are certain flaws, though. This doesn't happen too often. Actually, I'm going to bring it up for Civil War, which is one that I absolutely love and possibly my favorite event.
It saved Marvel. It saved Marvel. Marvel was close to bankruptcy.
It's one of my favorite events.
And it saved Marvel.
It's a great concept, too.
There's actually one small flaw to this, and it, in the story, I guess not that big of a deal, but about midway through, there's a fight between Spider-Man and Iron Man. This fight began in one of the Spider-Man tie-in issues. So when you're reading Civil War, you go from one issue to the next, this fight's already started.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you have to actually go and get that tie-in to be able to know that.
And one of my favorite examples is DC's, like, the hottest of hot messes countdown from 2004, I think it was, where literally everything was a tie-in to another miniseries, which tied into another miniseries.
Was that
it was
the
like
thing
the Ouroboros.
It was the second weekly comic they
did.
Yeah, they
did, say, yeah, that was a weekly
thing.
Did
52,
wasn't it?
They did 52, and it was good.
Yeah, because 52 was the missing year. After Infinite Crisis, all your top-tier heroes in DC, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, everybody, they all kind of took off. They're basically, it's like, okay, we saved the universe again. We need a vacation.
Yeah.
So they all left, and basically 52 is what happened while they were gone. So it was basically filled with a bunch of B and C and Q level heroes. And it was a fantastic book. It had multiple writers, including Grant Morrison.
Yep.
Including Jeff Johns.
I think Mark Waid was involved.
Mark Waid
as well.
Yeah. There was, I believe there was four writers. And that's one of the things that they collaborated, but they each kind of had their own stories. They each took a certain characters, and then they sort of tied things together, and it worked out really well. The problem with Countdown, which became Countdown to Final Crisis, is
which
that
became literally an event comic leading to another event comic.
The problem that was with that one, as opposed to 52, is that it was an... I love Paul Dini and everything, but it was completely overseen. completely watched over by Paul Dini, one guy, as opposed to having these four. And there was a lot of other writers involved, but it was still, instead of a collaboratory type thing, it was just this one guy. And I feel like it might have been too much.
Well,
because I actually, yeah, believe it or not, because I missed the boat on 52, I'm like, screw this, I'm getting Countdown. I have all 52 issues of Countdown.
That is exactly what they were going for, too.
Exactly,
because
yeah,
DC was like, holy crap, this made money and was good. You know what part of that we can leave out? If we leave out the good, it's still going to make money. So they,
which
just...
brings us to the entire thing with the events, too, is they are a company trying to make money, and they are trying to expand their readership. Now, what's a better way to expand your readership than to hook the people that you already know are reading?
And that's the really weird balance between these event comics. Like, a lot of the comics industry comes down to the fact that it's basically stories versus industry. Mm-hmm. They need to make a profit to exist as a publishing house, but at the same time, you know, you want them to tell
but
stories.
But there's a point where the companies... And Marvel and DC are the big ones. I'm not going to say a lot of the indie ones do this often because it's not as prevalent in the indie companies.
They're just happy to sell books.
They're happy to sell books. For Marvel and DC, there's a certain point where it feels like they've slapped you in the face or they've treated you to a good story. Okay? And when it gets to the point where I have to collect a main book... And then, sure, now to actually understand that story, I need to collect 40 other comic books a month. And I'm suddenly going from spending $12 to $20 a month to like $180 a month. Now, me as a store, I appreciate that. But as a customer, I see
game.
The frustration on many of my customers' faces when suddenly they not only have to get this 12-issue arc, they have to get 14 other issues a week just to make that 12-issue arc make sense. Now, it doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
Fear itself is probably the biggest victim of this. Fear itself, you could read the main arc, but it was so much more fulfilling if you got to read all the side stories.
Because there was so much going on with all these other characters who had the hammers and everything that were all in their own books and their own tie-ins, that there was stuff going on in so many different places. Because I, for one, I only collected the main thing.
Yeah.
And I basically, any holes that I had in the story, I just got from you whenever, because you read them all since you own the shop, so I was able to at least find out any details that I missed, but not everybody is that lucky.
And that therein is the thing, is the moment that an event crosses the line where it's almost like it's a chore to keep up with, that's when you lose readers, and that's when the companies end up having a reverse effect of what they're really actually trying to accomplish with these events.
Right.
And that's when you have people like Mike who gave up on comics.
Yeah.
Right. And I know other people that come to my store that events cause them to stop collecting a specific company or altogether.
And it's weird because it's like a summer blockbuster. They market it really heavily. Like, you've got an Infinity poster up in your window. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's they give out promotional items for it. They view it as like that summer blockbuster event
They've
that
got
everyone wants.
Banners going across the tops of the comics for months ahead right. of time, saying, you know, this it's many coming. Weeks back, yeah. this many. You know, 5 weeks until Infinity, 3 weeks till Infinity, Infinity.
I still think that the, if they had a way to do it where you opened a comic and that guy who does all
from
those movie trailers this summer.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they do that in their digital apps, actually.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, Marvel probably. AR, it's probably.
I've seen, actually, they've done kind of like a motion comic preview, and it's not for a motion comic, but they do it. Basically make a trailer for an event. I've seen them online.
This summer,
yes,
when evil returns, there's only one hero. He happens to be the hero you collect, so we're putting this in every book.
Howard the Duck. now, actually, I just had a thought while you guys were talking there, where events have gone wrong and they've had to redo everything. Clone Saga. Yes. Think about how bad they had to back. Like,
technically, they're still feeling, you know, the after effects of that because who was Scarlet Spider again? It's Kane.
Kane is Scarlet
so
Spider.
Still going.
Jackal's still running around trying to clone Lord. People.
So
oh, the whole thing
so
is just a cluster.
In the Spider books, basically, in the 70s, there was a short, like, it was like two or three issues where he was like, he found out that somebody made a clone of him, and it's comics, so of course. He thought the clone died. So we went along for like 20 years, and then suddenly in 1992, 3, 4, whatever, the clone comes back, and he's like, oh, I don't know who's real and who's not. And it, as a concept, you know, comics are all about digging up old bits of ephemera and exploring them.
Yeah.
As a concept, people were like, okay, this is interesting. There's a mystery to it. The problem at this point was Marvel being run by the people who are currently running DC Comics. Sorry, I just feel like getting so bitter.
Wait, are you trying to make a line there that the Clone Saga was bad and DC Comics now?
There we go. Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
Chris, can you get a job as my surtext guy?
Okay, cool.
Sub and you can,
all right, sure,
so,
yeah,
so,
no problem.
So Marvel was in dire straits due to terrible mismanagement at that time. So basically they said the people were interested in this Clone Saga, and they got people hooked. So the problem is the editors and the higher-ups at Marvel said, make this go longer. So make this, you know, long and long and long and have new characters come in and let's try to figure out what's...
The problem, it's kind of like if you have some Play-Doh. Yeah. When we start rolling it to try to make it longer, it becomes very, very thin.
Well, it's like Die Hard. See, you know, if you watch Die Hard, if Die Hard was 10 hours long...
It's the best movie ever.
Can you imagine hour six? You would just be like, just shoot him. Just shoot him.
And that's
I get it. He walked across some more glass barefoot.
Look, they're European. Shoot them, okay?
Yeah. No, but I know what you're saying, and I think a lot of the the comic industry almost imploded on itself in the 90s, in the late 90s, and this was partially due to the fact that the companies were pumping out more books than people could collect.
Right.
Okay, people only have so much disposable income, and the moment that you pump out 80 times more books than the people have disposable income, you start to bankrupt yourself.
Right.
Okay, and what I'm afraid of with the comic industry is I'm starting to see those trends coming back again.
Yeah.
You know, would a comic company rather do, as DC is doing right now, and I'm using this as a good point, they have 52 books, okay, right now, not counting miniseries.
Yeah.
But 52 books. Now, Marvel, on the other hand, I don't even know how many they have anymore because it's constantly in flux. One week they've got 80, another week they've got 300. And then they go down to 50, and it's like very hard.
And then they randomly cancel books.
But when a company starts to put out books just for the sake of having them, then you're going to lose one of two things. In the 90s, they lost out on story because there's only so many good writers. There was tons of artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but there wasn't enough. There wasn't enough writers to go around to keep the stories solid, and when you put out more books than you have the resources to keep up with, then the books are not worth collecting because the books are either going to be crappily drawn or crappily written or both.
Yeah,
I feel a big problem is
and one thing too. I've noticed that Marvel's been pretty good at is if you've got a bad writer, it's got a good artist. If you got a good artist, it's got a mediocre artist.
Right.
And they save their good artist, good writer combinations for their events.
Yes.
This is true. Very true.
Okay.
Especially when they kind of groom somebody like for Secret Invasion. This is what you were talking about on a previous episode. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Lanil Yu.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you. He was doing Avengers, and that was it. Like, I mean, he was doing New Avengers or whatever, and it was fine. He had a very kind of interesting, unique art style. And then when it came time for Secret Invasion, Bendis was like, "I've been working with him on Avengers. I want him," and it skyrocketed him right up. You know,
That's I think part of the reason that companies still do events is that they sell for good or bad. It's very rare that people will wholeheartedly reject.
Which is funny because
people
who complain and say, you know, oh, there's too many events, yet they still
buy them.
So
yeah.
It's like, okay, God, people, I hate this event. Give me another title.
I think from the perspective of someone who sees a lot of customers come through my store and purchase events. It's not so much as the event itself, but like I said, there's a difference between when a company handles an event correctly and when they handle it incorrectly.
Right.
Okay, if an event has a spine book that the event takes place in, and this can be its own side series, or this can be we're going to focus this around Batman, the comic called Batman.
Right.
Or like
right?
the Justice League.
Or the Justice League right or something. And then they pick maybe three or four other splash books. Something that is realistically possible for somebody who maybe only gets one or two comics a week to maybe buy that extra one or two comics a week, then that's a good event.
Yep.
Because you've caused the reader to be interested to pick up the side stories. You've caused the reader to get the complete story. And the reader is happy and tried some new things and perhaps might keep on one of those books. But however, when you do an event and it's a clusterfuck across 30 different comic books... and there's no real major book that it's supposed to be in, then that's when it becomes a problem because that's when the readers are like, all right, I collect Superman and I collect Superboy. Why do I now have to cross over and start collecting Wonder Woman, Flash, and Green Arrow?
Yeah.
You know, for a Superman event.
Yeah.
Okay? Because Superboy's in it for about two panels.
Yes, exactly. So,
hey, Green Arrow. Hey, Superboy.
And that's it. That's it. You know, you'll see like the Flash run by in a Superman comic. So it's like... that tied into the event because in the background, the Flash ran by during this Flash event. When they actually managed to contain it to that methodology of we're just going to have it cross over into the pertinent books and we're not going to overwhelm the reader, then it turns out to be pure profit for the company and the reader leaves happy.
Right, because you're not overwhelmed and you might get a chance to sample other books. For example, in making Lemons out of Lemonade with Age of Ultron, which was one of the most recent events that I actually got into because I really like Ultron as a character. Cyborg. I'll lend you my books.
Okay, cool.
Cyborg. Ultron is a cyborg bent on destroying humanity.
Okay? Created by Hank Pym.
Hank Pym, who's got a... backpack full of life stories you got to unpack.
Mm-hmm.
But the series itself, I was actually really disappointed in because it ended up, A, not having Ultron in it, which is weird for the fact that it's called Age of Ultron, and it was an entire, without being billed as such, an alternate reality story.
That's what I kind of heard. Like, I didn't know a lot about
and
it.
But... when I was, like, expecting, there's this really great Ultron issue that Kurt Busiek wrote in the 90s where Ultron takes over a country. And it's really a fun read. It's popcorn. It's a good read. But Ultron, Age of Ultron, is just, time travel and alternate reality. Okay. However, because it was only, like you were saying, Chris, it was connected to a couple of other books. Fantastic Four, Fearless Defenders, and
most of them were just one-shots.
And most of them were just a one-shot issue in that. I actually started reading and really enjoy Fearless Defenders, a really great female-centric Marvel comic, because of that tie-in. Because I was like, well, let's see what happened before this issue. And it was a really good read. Same thing with Fantastic Four. Same thing with Superior Spider-Man. And the event itself was kind of meh.
But it got you to read other things.
But it got me to read other things. And there was a coda that was, I think it was a 10.1, that was amazing. Probably one of the best things that I've read in a while from an event from Marvel about the history of Hank Pym, written by Mark Waid.
Was it not beautiful when he stained himself blue with the Kool-Aid package?
It was so good. Yeah. And it's just a really great, and I mean, and that's actually then led into Avengers AI, which is a really great series about all the robot Avengers fighting robot.
Interesting.
Fighting robots.
I love the Doombot. Reprogrammed Doombot is my favorite.
And one of the characters is a reprogrammed Doombot who just talks like Doom.
That's amazing.
So,
yeah, I'm interested.
And in the second issue, features him getting punched and his head flying away through a building and just landing in a random building and just being pissed off. It's so good. But the thing is, even from a lackluster event, because they handled it well, I don't necessarily feel like I'm really dying to go back and read the event itself, but it
without
it did,
the event, you wouldn't
have
Avengers
all these other
AI
interesting books and these interesting concepts.
And you wouldn't have found Fearless Defenders.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I think when it all boils down to it, there is definitely a good and a bad way to handle the events in the comic books.
For sure.
Now, I actually had a thought. You ever notice how it's only really Marvel and DC that do them? Although I can think of one IDW event that they did called Infestation.
Oh, yeah.
Infestation. That was a fantastic multi-property crossover.
Oh, that was fantastic.
I never read that, but... I'll
Mike,
be honest,
thank you.
Yes, Ghostbusters, Ninja Turtles fighting zombies.
Oh, and
Transformers and G.I.
Joe. And
G.I. Joe.
It was like your childhood
and Star
into
Trek.
One book.
And yeah.
Did Infestation 2?
They did, yeah. The Infestation 2 was a few other properties. They brought in Ghostbusters and a few other things.
Is there like a trade for that?
Probably. I'll look into
ordering
it.
Better be.
But yeah, I mean, that's why I'm glad sometimes some of the smaller companies will do it and they put all their effort into it.
Other events as well. I mean, you brought one up last episode, the whole Army of Darkness versus
Evil
Nightmare on Elm Street versus Friday the 13th. That was a huge event that happened over one summer for Dynamite Comic Books. Dynamite actually is a subsidiary of Marvel, so they actually do the occasional event. Mm-hmm. They currently have one going right now called Masks that is tying in a bunch of their noir characters together in one book. You've got like the Shadow mixing it up with Green Hornet, mixing it
awesome.
Up with a few other things.
And they had Army of Darkness and Marvel Zombies as a tie-in too, which again, because Dynamite's a subsidiary of Marvel,
they can do that. So there are events. Oh, there's actually one coming out this month that Mike, you're probably going to be interested in. Justice League versus He-Man.
Yep.
Yeah,
in the box right away.
Yeah, Justice
League. My wife is shaking her head.
It's going to be a 4 or 6 part series. I can't remember, but it's a 4 or 6 part event that is going to have the Justice League go off against the Masters of the Universe.
P-Man's going to kick the crap out of Superman. One word, magic.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, there are other companies that do the events. Hellboy has a number of events that go on in his comics in the Dynamite. I believe Star Wars comics are nothing but an event.
I forget, Star Wars, I believe both the original crew and the Next Generation met the X-Men at some point.
There's Star Trek, Doctor Who, and Star Trek. So anyway, there are other companies do the events, but they usually handle them well because they don't spill over into a billion other comics
because they don't have a billion other comics
to spread out into.
So they also kind of, you know, rely on the popularity of the properties involved because they're kind of external from those comic companies because they're based on TV shows and movies and stuff like that.
And that's fundamentally what a really good event does is it allows an opportunity for more storytelling either in the book or in the future and sort of develops the world. Because like one of the events that I've recently in the last year or so just gotten obsessed with was the Marvel Annihilation saga, what ended up being a huge saga, which was all about a couple of writers being given license to redevelop the cosmic Marvel universe.
Backstory, yeah.
Like the Nova and Silver Surfer and Galactus and all these characters that had been ignored for decades. Well, maybe like 15 years at that point. But it's really great because it organically grew from a short... the first series is only 3 books and then built further and further and then really got
Let me pick your brain on something, Jamie.
Go for it.
Kind of a side note, but it crossed my mind. The Silver Surfer. I haven't met many people that don't like the Silver Surfer.
Yes.
What is it about the Silver Surfer that doesn't get him his own comic book ever and he only ever ends up in events? Because he's one of those characters that everybody seems to love... He's never in anything solid other than events.
The tricky thing,
except for maybe his like '90s series, well, but yeah. Everything had a series in the '90s. Well,
and I saw this great image from his '90s series where it was just Galactus and the Inbetweener just punching each other for two pages. And if you ever want to just get your mind blown, it's like, you guys are cosmic deities who can control reality with a touch. Why are you pummeling each other? But the Silver Surfer is a really, really, really tricky character to write.
Actually, because he's so powerful, man?
Because he's sort of aloof. Part of his character nature is being aloof. He basically patrols, you know, he has to go from different planet to different planet, and almost every series that has been written, it's hard to get him to do something continuously, because that's his whole nature, is he explores. So he goes to a planet and he, you know,
helps
these people out. Or
it's like the littlest hobo of the Marvel Universe.
I was going to compare him to Kane from
I'll make new friends.
Oh, I just picked up a couple of Silver Surfer books, and that's all I'm going to hear from between issue. It's like, oh, it's wrapping
maybe
up. Here come the closing
I'll
credits.
Settle down.
Maybe tomorrow
I'll just keep surfing on.
Oh, my now power made cosmic's gone. But they did a really good job in Annihilation of making. But when he shows up in events, they can do really cool things with him. Like I talked about in the one shot issue, he's a really cool character to sort of look at for an issue. But it's really hard to continue on with him to make him sort of relatable, I guess.
So I guess to wrap up the episode, guys, because we're getting near that time again, let's all go around the table and pick an event. I'll let Jeff go first so I don't snipe him this time.
I don't
Unless,
know
of course, something. He doesn't have one, and then I'll go.
I'm just trying to think because, like I said, I'm a sucker for events, so it's a matter of kind of narrowing it down.
Batman events. What you got?
Oh, well, and again, it's the quality. Well, not quality, but it's what you would consider an event. Like, Hush is one that I've always really loved because I'm a sucker for Jim Lee's art.
Yep.
Jeff Loeb told a pretty good story, and he managed to bring in so many people. And one thing, I've had friends who have read it and haven't really enjoyed it because they pretty much knew who Hush was right from the get-go. But the thing is, when you get to the end, that's not really the big reveal. The reveal kind of has something to do with something else, which is what I really enjoyed. So I'll go with that. I'll go with Hush because Jim Lee's art, Jeff Loeb's writing, phenomenal, and it encompassed pretty much the entire Batman universe.
And it handled it well. It handled it well.
I heard it described as like a greatest hits of the Batman universe. It's got everything
it really
on.
Does.
Have you not read the Hush?
I haven't read it yet.
We'll really find good. A way to get you to read it.
You can borrow mine. You give me your
done
Avengers, the Age Ultron, of Ultron, sure. And I'll give you my Hush.
Because I always like No Man's Land. I really like No Man's Land after the Batman universe.
Yeah, that
had
one's
an earthquake
huge. Five volumes of graphic
my
novels.
My favorite Bat character is actually Cassandra Cain, and that was her first appearance.
That was her
origin,
I really
enjoyed that. So I guess for me, like I said, I really, really, really liked Annihilation. I thought it was one of the better handled events. I also really cannot recommend enough, Chris, you mentioned it earlier, the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, and Infinity Crusade.
He's got a couple of them in his graphic novel
section.
Yeah,
they've got a couple of them here. I actually grabbed Infinity Gauntlet from you a while back and reread it. And it is, again... I would say, especially Infinity Gauntlet, but Infinity War and Crusade as well, are just popcorn, pure, like, visceral moments.
It was 90s comics done right.
Yeah, and it was like it was the best big bad I think Marvel had ever done in an event.
Now,
where it's like you want to see him lose.
Here's my question for you, though. As somebody who, I hate to say it, being a comic nerd, hasn't actually read those yet.
That's okay. I haven't read Hush.
touche. Do you need to read Crusade or anything else? Like, or can you just read
Gauntlet?
Just read Gauntlet, and you'll be cool.
And
you
that's what's
to.
So great, like Chris was saying. It's a spine. There are tie-ins,
but
it doesn't necessarily
book.
Matter. If you read before it, there's a Silver Surfer Rebirth of Thanos trade. which is really great, but it doesn't, you don't have to read it. I didn't read it until years after I read Infinity Gauntlet.
And it's fun setup, but it's not something that's mandatory.
Yeah, it's not at all. It's a great read. If you want to know how to read like a perfect event, like mid-90s comics done right, Infinity Gauntlet's so fun.
Fantastic.
And War and Crusade are great too. Jim Starlin killed it.
All right.
Yeah, it goes Infinity Gauntlet, then Infinity War, then Infinity Crusade as the correct order to read them in.
Good to know.
Events. What about you, Mike? How about an event?
Maximum Carnage, Spider-Man.
Oh,
fantastic.
Yes.
And like, I think that's a perfect
Spider-Man
example.
Done right, unlike the Clone Saga.
That's a perfect example of an event that was so popular, it even spawned its own video game.
Yeah, and that's what got me into it. Was I had the video game, and then I got the big trade a couple years later. I'm like, man, this is awesome. Another one that I really liked as an event, I'm gonna go against the grain here. I really liked Age of Apocalypse because I just got the trades, and I really enjoyed reading that. That was a big deal for like a while, and hell, there's still Age of Apocalypse stuff going on now.
It was another one of those ones that was like four giant county phone books, not like a New York phone book, but I mean, four of these like thick graphic novels. So, I mean, it's a big read to get through.
And then, well, the event crossed over almost 2 years in Marvel, so.
Oh, yeah.
And X-Men books, which is
no
shortage
pretty much,
of.
And then I guess my final event, I don't know if you even call it an event, I just call it a big storyline, would be Days of Future Past. Because look how much stuff that is like spider-webbed into.
Yeah, Days of Future Past, and then we got the movie coming out next
year
and everything.
I'm sure we're probably going to get a re-release of that.
Oh, probably.
Which will be fantastic.
I was going to say, Sentinels are the coolest bad guys ever.
Yeah. For me, right now, there is something going on in the comics that I'm thoroughly enjoying. It's a tie into Spider-Man as well. I don't know if you classify it as an event at the moment, because I'm not sure if this is how permanent this changes or when it will change back, because it's inevitable. But right now, I'm thoroughly enjoying what they're doing with Spider-Man and Superior Spider-Man.
So good.
I am thoroughly enjoying the whole process that Doc Ock overthrew Peter Parker's mind and his body, and he is trying to be a better Spider-Man than Peter Parker ever was, except he's still got the mentality of the villain, so he's still hiring minions and building gadgets and trying to be a control freak. And
sorry, I just had the mental image of Spider-Man with a bunch of those little yellow guys from Despicable Me.
Well, no,
that'd be awesome.
The great thing with the book is in the process of him being literally a better Spider-Man than Spider-Man was, he's also learning how much of a douche he was as Doc Ock. My favorite scene was in an Avenging Spider-Man issue. I can't remember the issue number. It was
16 or 15.
16 or 15, where he's just taken over Peter's body, and he goes into one of his underwater layers to go collect some gadgetry, and Doc Ock pops up on the screen like an image, an old recording of him, and he's sitting there monologuing, and Doc Ock literally starts going, "Wow, I sounded like a complete douche. Did I really sound like that? No wonder Spider-Man always kicked my butt. You know, I spent more time talking than fighting. How is it that me, a brilliant scientist, was outdone by Spider-Man? I now know why.
I got my ass kicked by a kid.
It's really weird because, for something, it doesn't advertise necessarily that it's a tie-in, but every time I see the Superior Spider-Man, the Doc Ock in Spider-Man's body show up in a crossover, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Because he's trying, you always get this idea that he's trying to talk to people like he's Spider-Man, but at the same time, he'll occasionally slip up and like call them pitiable fools or something.
Or an imbecile.
Imbeciles or something.
And somebody gives him that sidelong glance.
Yeah, and it's so much fun to read that book now. And it's a different way of looking at an event, because it's just such a cool concept that you want to follow it. You're not forced to.
See, and the thing is, that was a thing when it first started. So many people were on the fence. So many people were like, oh my God, how could you get rid of Peter Parker as Spider-Man, et cetera, et cetera. But everybody, for the past 5-6 years, all I hear is people going, I am tired of great power and great responsibility being driven down my throat. I'm tired of this. And then when they finally do something, people are like, how could you do this? But then they start reading it, and like the first 3 issues, I had so many people come in and be like, I don't like this. I don't like where it's going. And now they're completely hooked, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I can't believe Spider-Man was anything other than this.
I know, I don't want it to end, which is not something I'm used to saying about an event. Like, I want Doc Ock to continue on. I recommend, and it's only been like 6 issues or so, I guess, or maybe more,
I think
7, 8, 10.
It's been a few more, because the first trade's already out, and I think it's 4 or 5.
But
I think I have to pick that up.
I recommend those books, especially Avenging Spider-Man and the Superior Spider-Man team-up, which Avenging became. And there's another great book in that line, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, that's all about the B-level Spider-Man villains trying to fight each other.
The new Spider-Man, yeah. So, yeah, this fantastic event to get on. The graphic novels out. Unfortunately, most of my back issues have long been sold. But
you'll get more because it sounds like you got two people interested at this table.
Yeah, I'm totally down for this.
And to tie everything back to the terrible Clone Saga, the new Scarlet Spider series, which was a character introduced in the Clone Saga, ridiculous clone of Spider-Man.
I love his costume.
The new series is amazing. I cannot believe that the Clone Saga gave birth to something that is not execrable garbage.
Could you say it's spectacular?
I would say it's amazing, is spectacular.
See, my wife's
going to
get more angry
amazing.
At me because I'm getting more books. She's already she's just giving me the finger now.
But
we're helping
it's
Chris.
Worth it. It's
help
worth
me,
it.
Help
they
him.
Are so good. the Spider-Man, I can't say enough how good. I'm blown away that I actually enjoy a Spider-Man book for the first time in decades.
Well, I guess let's wrap this up then. So, I guess, we're done. What we're going to talk about next time? No damn clue.
Not sure. It's going to be a while. We'll come up with something.
Yeah, exactly.
We always do.
So, anyway, guys, for this edition of Beyond the Gauntlet, once again, located at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario, check us out on Facebook and...
on Twitter at Gauntlet Podcast.
And you can also leave feedback on the Facebook group, or you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. So, for this edition, we have been...
I am the superior Jamie McBurney.
I am the spectacular Jeff DeHaan.
I am Mike Maximum Carnage Dodd.
And I am the amazing Chris Peddle, an operating of the gauntlet.
By Civil War.